people are really scared just to start. You know, they have all the tools they need. You know, they're looking at other people who are doing it successfully. They think that those people have some magic wand or secret. But at the end of the day, the people who are doing what you want to be doing, the only difference is that they just started doing it.
From To Be Magnetic, this is the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As the leading destination for neural manifestation, we dispel the woo-woo in order to help you create real, tangible results based on neuroplasticity, psychology, epigenetics, and energetics. Our goal is to normalize the practice of manifestation and empower you to get into the driver's seat of your life in order to manifest the experiences, relationships, and things that most align with your authenticity. Part of our manifestation process entails expanding past your limiting subconscious beliefs. Therefore, by tuning into this podcast with interviews from experts, thought leaders, spiritual teachers, scientists, and those with neural manifestation success stories, you're starting the process of expanding your subconscious in order to see to believe that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, the process begins.
Hey everyone, this is Heather, one of the TBM coaches, and I'm here to share my magnetic story from one of my clients. I'm so happy and so proud to share that after two sessions of working together, and also her diligently doing this work, she was able to call in her dream job with more money and better benefits using the shadow workshop. So in our sessions together, we really dug into her career and why was it that she was basically staying in a career that made her feel so small. We discovered that one of her shadows was the feeling of being needed. She wanted to feel like she had an integral part in the company. So she chose small companies in particular, so her role was always crucial. But by staying in these really small companies, it was keeping her small. By her being needed, she would not be discarded. And this idea of being discarded was something that stemmed from childhood. So by not dealing with this shadow, she realized that she was recreating these patterns over and over again in work. And the more that she made herself available with no boundaries of any kind, the more that she would not be discarded, right? She wouldn't be abandoned. And so after we dug in, when we started to talk about like, what did she actually want? What was the career she was looking for? And it was going to a bigger company. It was up-leveling and getting out of what she knew. Many tests came through, especially around emotional or situational triggers. She was tested and her boss offered her a lifeline because she got acquired to stay at a different company. And she finally realized after a couple sessions and digging in deeper that her needs were not being met and she was ready to up-level. She was ready to give up this idea of feeling needed for validation and for worth. So she ended up leaving. And of course, she was applying to different jobs and it was crickets, right? She was going through the magic dark. But we kept focusing on her vital needs, her authentic code. She was really, really doing really great around raising her energy, making sure that her energy and her actions were aligned, doing a lot of shadow, a lot of reinforcing and journaling. And then she was contacted by a company where she had actually forgotten that she had applied to this job. And the interview process was rigorous. It went on for quite some time. She wanted a higher salary and better benefits and some flex time. And she actually had to negotiate. And she did not back down for what she wanted. And when she got the job offer and it was lower than what she wanted, she countered again. She just knew that she was worth more and no longer was she going to play small. And they gave her exactly what she wanted and she accepted the job. and she couldn't be happier. And she continues on with this work. And we look to see where are any of these patterns playing in her current new job, just to make sure that she's staying magnetic, her actions and her energy are in alignment, and her authentic code is not being jeopardized. And that's how my client was able to use Unblocked Shadow Workshop to really step into her worth, to manifest her career, to step up in asking for what she wanted, knowing she was worth so much more than staying small. If you're ready to let go of stories that no longer belong to you, or if you need help deciphering what's true to you, book a session with me. Check out the show notes. There will be a link in there, and I can't wait to work with you.
Today we welcome Sophia Amorosa. She is a serial entrepreneur, New York Times bestselling author, founder of Nasty Gal and Girl Boss, and is the creator of Business Class, a comprehensive online entrepreneurship course that covers the fundamentals of starting your own business. Lacey and Sophia cover all of the insight into starting and running a successful business, life pivots, navigating greater self-worth, and finding confidence along the way. I am so excited for this episode. I'm sure many of you are familiar with Sophia at this point and have been a big fan of hers over the years. I remember years ago reading the Girl Boss book and being so inspired by this incredible businesswoman who was speaking so raw and unfiltered about her experience and had such confidence along her path. I know this will be a really expansive story for anyone, whether you're an entrepreneur or just navigating different life pivots, understanding what matters, what's part of your authentic code in career and in life. And here's some wisdom from this business wizard herself. I hope you guys enjoy the episode as much as I did.
And now a word from our partners. So when we made the decision to bring on partners to partner with on this podcast to take it to the next level, so that we could bring on even greater experts than we have recently, one of the main ones we've been talking about lately that I personally have been mentioning for the last 2 years is Blue Blocks, the blue and green light blocking company. I have 2 episodes with the founder, Andy Mann, and I've shared that I own 4 of their products that I've bought with my own money. That's the yellow glasses for daytime when it's overcast or rainy. So if you live in the UK or the Pacific Northwest, it's especially good for you. The red glasses, which I wear at night after the sun goes down, as well as the clear glasses, which are meant for sunny days during the day. I also swear by, travel with, and use every single night their blue light blocking sleep mask. So of course, it was a no-brainer to partner with Blue Blocks. To tell you more about them and to offer a more accessible price point for you to check out. I know actually many, many, many people in this community already have some of the products. But one thing I want to highlight today is the last episode that I did with founder Andy Mann, where we really, really dove deeply into hormones, fertility, aging. So pure vanity of what blue light and green light are doing to our aging process. And educating on blue light in general. And that's linked below if you haven't heard that episode. It is so enthralling. But for perspective, just one thing that I want to bring to your attention is how blue light's affecting you in general. And one of the major ways that nobody is really aware of is that blue light and green light are emitting from most of the devices that you're using daily. Certainly your computer, your phone, but things you don't even realize, like the clock on your oven or the lights on your Wi-Fi device. They're everywhere. And in that episode, Andy gives a really, really good free tip to take duct tape and put it over all of the blue and green light in your house. So there was a recent study that he was sharing with me on the podcast, which tests the frequencies of how light disrupts melatonin production, which is vital for not only sleep, but for the total balance and circadian rhythm of all of our hormones. And the authors found a very distinct band of light that suppresses melatonin that's 400 nm to 550 nm. This is 100% of blue light. Green light runs from 500 to 570 nm. And the study showed that blocking 100% of green light up to 550 nm is always required for optimal melatonin secretion. So if you're somebody who suffers from any type of sleep troubles whatsoever, hormone issues, and you're noticing rapid aging, blue light blocking is vital for you. It certainly has been for me, who has dealt with fertility and hormone disruption now for years. So if you're not familiar with the ways that you can go ahead and mitigate this in our world where literally we're surrounded by blue and green light, especially in the evenings, may it be light pollution outside, street lights, in your car, you know, even the screens in our car are affecting us. You're definitely going to want to tune in to Blue Blocks and their array of products. They've really thought of everything so far that we can do to mitigate this light. And they're the only brand that's 100% backed by science. So if you want to learn more about Blue Blocks, go ahead and check the link below. Listen to that episode. It'll blow your mind. You'll notice your sleep transforming immediately, just starting with the glasses. And if you want to give any of their products a try, use the code all caps magnetic, MAGNETIC, for 15% off your purchase. So I've shared this before, but I became sober curious before the term sober curious was a thing. In fact, I remember my very last drink was at Chateau Marmont, listening to the piano at Christmas, having a really fine scotch. I used to be a cocktail server for many years, and the last two were at the Thirsty Crow in Silver Lake. So I had wonderful education and nice scotches and whiskeys and more. And especially around the holidays or the evenings after meals, or when I'm in a really beautiful, warm place, I start to crave either digestives, a wonderful rosé, or a nightcap, like a beautiful scotch. And so for me personally, I thought that that was kind of all done with when I stopped drinking. Again, I did it for health reasons. It wasn't so much about not drinking, but that my body couldn't really withstand it anymore. And it wasn't until my birthday of last year that I discovered Kin Euphorics. I bought a bottle of it and I had my friend create a mocktail for my birthday party, who was a bartender for many years. And because it was a rainy day and we had a fire going, it was the perfect alternative to that fine scotch I would have during the holidays or in the evenings. Everybody loved it and enjoyed it. And so what I love about Kin is they have a few different products, one of which is called Dream Light. And it, like all of their products, has adaptogens, nootropics, and botanics. And this one in particular is the perfect digestive or nightcap because it has reishi mushroom, which taps into consciousness, calming, it reduces cortisol, while the passion flower and it relieves restlessness. And if you consume it consecutively, it's been shown to support sleep cycles. And the nootropics in it is 0.25 milligrams of melatonin, which signals the brain to ease into a state of rest without knocking us out. It also has the precursor to GABA, which produces ease to the mind. Tryptophan supports serotonin levels to relax the body. Think turkey after Thanksgiving. And then this is my favorite part of all, which plays into holidays and evenings especially, is the botanics in it are oak, clove, ginger, and cinnamon, which are the perfect digestion supports and gives that really earthy, beautiful taste that you could get with a scotch. So if you're somebody who's sober curious, you're sober, or you're just looking for a wonderful nightcap that mimics having a drink without any of the side effects and in fact has health benefits and calm, rest, relaxation support, Kin's Dream Light is your perfect product to turn to. Go ahead and use the code MAGNETIC15, all caps, that's MAGNETIC 15, to receive 15% off your purchase. Again, that's MAGNETIC, all caps, 15, to receive 15% off your purchase. All right, on to the episode. Is this a trip for you? Because you probably had a studio.
Yeah, we had a studio at our offices. I didn't do my podcast very remotely. So
what do you think of work and everything, you know, like being remote? I love it now.
I love it. I loved my team and I loved going into my office. We had a great spot in Silver Lake, but I'm pretty productive from home. Things are just less crazy. Like I've been able to have a bit of a lifestyle that I wasn't able to before COVID, which I'm very lucky to have, but I'm really flexing it. Like, I'm really taking advantage of it.
I'm right there with you. Yeah, everything in my life, I basically do everything from bed now, and I'm in my third trimester, so it's really aligned well for me.
Yeah, that must be nice. Where are you?
So I have a place, we do it as sort of a retreat through the company, but it's up outside of Yosemite in my hometown, and I'm up here, which is amazing. It just feels so nice to be away. But last night we had these crazy 100 mile per hour winds that it literally looks like Kansas outside after the tornado in Wizard of Oz. Like, my trash cans are everywhere. It's crazy out here.
That's crazy. Wait, so for a retreat, is there like tax benefits?
This is a great question to kick off with. So at first I did it because I'm like, you know, my partner and I have been together for 6 years now, and he already owned a home in Echo Park, and we knew at some point we wanted to buy in Topanga. But I was like, as a woman, it's really important for me to buy on my own. I'm an Aquarius, so it's like, you know, I'm so independent. I'm like, I want my own thing. And so I think it was 2018. I was like, I'm going to buy up here because it's literally the gateway to Yosemite. And then I'll share it with the community. And at the time, I needed tax shelter. So to me, it wasn't the best tax shelter, you know, because it's like, it's just not all depreciables. But to me, it seemed like it was the most fun tax shelter I could go with, that also served everybody in the community and myself. And it's been, yeah, really great. And now I sneak up here, especially COVID, we can't even rent it. So I've been up here a ton, because once I have the baby, I'm stuck in LA for a little bit. You know, it's just a fun way to have something that I love and can share. And I'm very Capricorn moon, where I'm always strategizing what's going to be the best plan here. And then how can I use everything to my advantage, which you probably do as well.
Totally. Yeah. I'm in escrow on a place in Kauai right now, kind of the same thing.
And whoa.
Yeah, I'm really excited. It's on the North Shore, not far from like Hanalei.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I guess I'm allowed to write off the percentage of it that I use for business. So
great. Yeah. And what's your plan with it?
I mean, we're just going to live there part time. You have to like actually Airbnb stuff there. You have to have like a license, and they're not giving away anymore. Everything kind of got grandfathered in. So I can do it just kind of like under the table. And I'm sure I could still, I don't know how that works, but it's not going to be like a rental.
Right.
I'm also just, you know, it's like, I don't want other people using my stuff. Like,
honestly, and I say this, you know, I know a lot of people listening to this podcast have stayed here, but every single time I come up here, I'm like, do I close this down to just be for me? It's like when the Smeg freezer has a hole in it now and is broken, and the handles are, you know, it's like constant stuff. And I'm a perfectionist in my aesthetic that it fucks me up every time.
Totally. Yeah. And just like energetically, it's like, it's similar to renting. I mean, your place is beautiful. I've seen pictures of it, but like, when I rent other places, it's like a crap plastic spatula or something. And, you know, half the reason, like, it's like, I wouldn't want my people to rent my nice stuff.
So yeah.
if I'm going to have crap stuff, I might as well just rent someone else's place. So this is really just like, I want to keep some clothes there. I want to have my Vitamix there, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, that's expensive, and I'll do some work out of there. But I don't think there's going to be a huge tax benefit.
Yeah, no, even this year, like our land on Topanga, because of COVID, we were kind of thinking, you know, it was so funny doing our Q1 meeting as a team at the top of the year. We're like, we're going to get a space this year. We're going to do all this stuff. And then thank God we didn't. You know, I've been talking to him about building some sheds on the property to be like the recording studio for this. Cause, you know, when there's a baby, it's like, I can't keep doing this in the house with crying and stuff. So, and I have a tax lawyer too. So we often have this conversation. I'm like, but what if I do this? And he's like, no.
Yeah. Usually you just pay them to tell you, don't do that. Don't spend that.
And pay 50% of everything to California. That's what they tell me.
Yes.
Well, the first question we always ask everybody is, what's your, if you know, sun, moon, rising?
Oh gosh, I have that Time Passages app, and it tells me, I don't know if you've seen that. It's not cute, but it's pretty comprehensive. I have Taurus sun, Capricorn moon, and Gemini rising.
Oh, great. I'm a Cap moon too.
I don't know what any of it means, really. I know Taurus generally. I don't know other people. Like, I don't know the other ones. I want to. It's a lot to remember.
It is.
So what does that all mean?
Well, the Cat Moon makes a lot of sense for you. Well, I'm going to explain this further, actually, a little bit in a minute. But our backgrounds might be sort of similar as well. Where did you grow up?
I was born in San Diego, lived there till I was like 7. And then we moved to Sacramento.
Right. So I grew up between Modesto and up here, like lower middle class. That I think we're probably pretty similar in all of that.
Central Valley. Yeah.
Yes. Did you go to college?
No.
Me neither.
I took some photo course classes at the San Francisco City College and just learned photography, but I didn't really do general ed stuff. And then I just started this eBay store when I was 22 and I got an education that I never anticipated after that.
Very quickly. So I'm very similar, did a tiny bit of JC and was like, this isn't for me. And I'm going to have to pay for it myself. So I don't need all of this debt because I have no idea what I want to do. But that Cap Moon, getting back to it. So, you know, and the astrologers listening are probably going to be like, she's really going to butcher this. But I identify with it a lot, especially whatever house it lands in. It's really where all of my business comes from and my groundedness in business, like logic, where a lot of people I feel like can get ungrounded or they can make really like really crazy decisions and stuff. But that Cat Moon keeps us like trailing away, having ideas, building a business, that masculine energy combined with our feminine. So I imagine we probably have a lot of similarity there.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Okay, well, good for everybody to know that. We got into your background a little bit, but yeah, go ahead and give us just a tiny bigger overview because most people listening will know your journey, I'm sure.
Yeah, gosh. I started a vintage eBay store called Nasty Gal when I was 22 back in late 2006 and built that, you know, bootstrapped it with just a few $100 to my name and an 87 Volvo. You know, eventually left eBay, launched a website, still sold vintage, and then started going to trade shows and curating cute stuff. And Nasty Gal grew, you know, in the first year from 70,000 in revenue to 250 to 1.1 to 6.5, and then to 28 the following year. And all of that was without investors. So I owned 100% of it. It was, you know, it was crazy. And then investors came in. We raised $50 million in venture capital. It was like a wild ride, you know. Wound up writing this book, Girl Boss. It became a Netflix series about my life. It's been like a real trip. And then Nasty Gal fell apart. And then I started a company called Girl Boss that COVID basically devoured mid-2020. And now I'm building an online course for entrepreneurs. I'm not building it. It's active. It's out in the world. It's called Business Class. It's really comprehensive online course about, you know, everything from, you know, leadership to finding your strengths and mapping your competition to building your website and intellectual property and LLCs versus C corps and S corps. So it's a lot. And it's just so fun after 15 years of entrepreneurship, instead of just learning things the hard way and continuing to, and I'm still learning, but to just pass it on and to be this periscope for a generation of entrepreneurs who are coming up, especially today in COVID with, you know, all the tools they need, Zencastr to record a podcast and Shopify and Squarespace and Etsy. None of these existed. My Instagram didn't exist in 2007. So, you know, there's just so much more to take advantage of with these digital tools to start businesses. But beyond that, nobody really knows where to start or, you know, how to spend their money, how to invest it, what to focus on. So that's really what we do with Business Class. And it's just been such a blast.
Yeah, it looks so beautiful from the little bit that I've gotten to see. I can't wait to take it at some point.
Thank you.
I think Grace on our team has and loved it. So that I think the very first starting point then with this, I know there are so many entrepreneurs who follow this brand, who do this work. And certainly when I used to take clients, I would have hand over fist coaches and everybody coming and saying like, how do I build my practice? How do I build my business? How do I build my following? But my very first question is, what are qualities of a good entrepreneur? Because I could spot when I was like, I know you think you're one, but you're actually probably not. Not that I would ever tell somebody that. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I was a bad employee and I never was like, wow, I'm bad at this. Maybe I'll be an entrepreneur. It was like, I hate this. I'm bad at it. So I guess I'll just like try on this eBay thing for size. And it wasn't a huge commitment. So I think entrepreneurs are just, well, they're willing to take risks. They're willing to try things. They listen to what's working and what's not working. They iterate quickly. They're not overly proud or egotistical of their ideas. They're, you know, willing to meet their customer in the middle with what their vision is and what it is that they find out that the market really needs from them, because that's really what a business is. It's not just like your dream thing. It's what is it that people want? What are they going to pay for? I think entrepreneurs are resourceful. So even to this day, I harvest all I have for all that I can have. And I have much more of a platform. I mean, I have like an incredible platform, but even when I began, you know, I hacked everything I could. You know, I used the little that I had to make the most of what I could. And I didn't focus on what I didn't have. And, you know, it wasn't the era of Instagram. There wasn't entrepreneurship, wasn't this like sexy thing. And I wasn't paying attention to Forbes 30 under 30. I don't think anybody was. So it was a different time. But yeah, also a little like, you have a little bit of a chip on your shoulder. You know, you want to prove something. The healthiest chip on your shoulder is proving something to yourself. And I think I just always wanted to prove to myself that I could do something that I totally shouldn't. I'm like not qualified to do, and no one would have ever hired me to do. And that's just kind of like a fun game of like sneaking in the back door and being like, whoa, I'm a business person. That's weird. I used to be like an anti-capitalist and I accidentally did this. And there's parts of me that I don't relate to because it's been a long time, but still it's just like I followed my nose and listened to what was working. And that's all very simple. But now I'm like, well, I'm like this lady. Do you know what I mean? Like people's perception of me is not who I am. That's a whole nother thing. But I'd say those are some great traits of entrepreneurs.
And for me personally, so I tried a few things out, you know, before things really started to flow. And I was never trying them out to make money. Like that was always a very clear thing for me. It was, I hate working at X, Y, and Z so much. I'm not good at that. I don't have a skill set at X, Y, and Z. So I'm just going to keep throwing things at the wall based on my interests until one supports me. You know, like, and I wasn't even thinking about the financial factor. How important do you think it is? Because I would get people coming to me, and a great example is my brother. I remember he was getting out of high school and he was like, I'm going to start a blog. What kind do you think I should start to make money? Or people will ask for podcasts. And my biggest thing I would always give is advice. I'm like, whatever you're 100% so lit up about and passionate about, and then all of the things you mentioned will start to unfold. Like, are people responding? And then you have to start to pivot to service them better. But I was like, if your thing is collecting nickels, you're going to find a million people out there who love collecting nickels that want to read about it on your blog. And so what are your thoughts on that? Because I know people, especially in 2020, are trying anything after losing jobs. And, you know, what do you think is the most successful way to approach it?
Yeah, I think it absolutely starts with your passion. And, you know, not every passion is monetizable. Finding it first, I think, is really important. You're not going to put in the hours you need to build a business if you're not really excited about what you're doing. And I think that's the most common type of entrepreneur today. That's like the 99% of us that haven't gone to business school. And in business class, I do use some business school kind of exercises that I found to be really helpful. For the most part, we're not people who, you know, went to Stanford, got our degree, and then we're like, I see a white space in millennial Rogaine, you know, or I'm going to sell like a cool mattress. Like I'm going to make mattresses cool. Like, I guess if your mission is to like help people sleep better, I mean, usually those founder stories are kind of made up. Like nobody's like, man, I want to start a mattress company because like, I don't like my mattress. Like that's just not, you know, there are some inventions for sure where people are like, oh man, I was having this problem and I solved it with XYZ. But a lot of the stuff is, you know, entrepreneurs just taking it. Of course you want to take advantage of the white space, but there are people out there who see this more clinically and they're like, you know, if I have 1% of like the razor market, then I can, you know, have a $1 billion business. And that's just not the way I approach things. I just always want to marry the opportunity with what it is that I love doing, but to really have the momentum to be a founder who's building something that you care about. I mean, you have to care about it first. To do a good job, you just have to care about it first. Absolutely.
Agreed. Yeah. And, you know, I do read those stories as well. And I feel like half the time I'm reading them, they're like, before this, I sold yada, yada, yada for so much money. It's like they already have a jump start, especially if they're in like the tech space and stuff like that. It always seems like they really kind of worked out their business school somewhere else before, and it happened to be kind of passion oriented.
Totally. And I really envy that. As like different as it is, there's so many mistakes I wouldn't have made had I even had a job in an office before my name was on the lease of one.
Same.
Yeah.
I know. That's a, and let's talk about that a little bit, you know, because you're such a great example. And I think you're in such a good space about it, of learning through your mistakes, right? Like, you're so open about it. You've had a lot of stuff you probably wish that you would have done differently.
I pioneered it.
You totally. And I mean, like, in real time, publicly. Let's talk about that for people who are like, wow, you know, I have failed at things when I've tried it before, or I'm currently going through that now.
That's how it works, right? I mean, if you want to live a life that is predictable, you probably shouldn't be an entrepreneur. There's always going to be ups and downs. And as hard as it's been for me to experience criticism, you know, being the poster child of entrepreneurship and on the cover of Forbes magazine and New York Times bestselling author, then being kind of crucified for not being the kind of boss that I didn't know I was supposed to be, building a company culture with like hundreds of people, you know, hiring 100 people in a year. And like, of course, I just don't know how to make that a great place to work. So, you know, publicly being criticized for the places where I stumbled was really, really challenging. At the same time, I'm not someone who looks at, and a lot of it was bullshit. A lot of it was, you know, assumptions people had about me, but I still listen. You know, there's some truth to take from every criticism that you get. And as hard as that is to kind of appreciate, whether it's failure or criticism, even if it doesn't feel constructive, there's a way to extract something constructive from it. But that means listening to it and facing it and weeding through the stuff that, you know, maybe isn't something to learn from, that just hurts. And I, you know, I think it's really cool to get on a stage and be like, I don't give a shit about anything. I'm so confident, and people cheer and they're like, yeah. And it's just like, that's crazy. If you're not listening, if you are just tuning out any kind of feedback that you have in the world because you're so overconfident, you know, how can you learn? So I don't buy into that as much as people want me to be that person, I think, who's like, I don't listen to my haters. And it's like, no, I don't have like haters, but there's an opportunity to learn from everything and everyone that comes into your orbit.
Agreed. I love that. And for you, I mean, I definitely imagine that you cover this in business class, but when it does come to company culture, or let's say people are even at that spot with employees, I mean, well, actually, this is, I think, a better preliminary question. When do you know it's time to get employees and to build your company that way?
I mean, I think it's when you are too busy to do the work yourself. I think you should do as much as you can yourself in the beginning. And, you know, what I teach is profitable bootstrap business. I've done the thing where I have venture capitalists. I don't want to do it again, at least, or this time for the indefinite future. I love being in the space that you and I are in and kind of the educational world.
I already love what you are saying. And I'm like, I want to take it deeper. I also believe in that PS, the bootstrap model, because it's all that I know and it's all I've ever known, you know, not having any business background prior to anything I'm doing. But even when I remember I was working, because I've had a job since I was 14, often multiple, and I remember working at this little pizza place in high school. And I was always like, let's fix this up and make it better. But my boyfriend can do the construction. You know, it was always bootstrappy. And the same thing when I started this brand, it was like the very basic Squarespace for free. Like everything was free. So I think that's amazing. But I do think the VC conversation or raising is interesting because we've been, you know, broached, and I have no, and I apologize because who knows if this will ever change, but I talk about this a lot with the team. I personally don't have interest in that, especially at this point, because I know what can come with that. You know, it's like, this person has to go, this person has to go, this person has to go, bring in C-level. You just lose, I'm imagining, a lot of control and a lot of the things that I actually like about what we do. What are your thoughts on that, having gone through, I think, a tumultuous journey?
Yeah, you know, it was quite the experience going from, you know, an early team that felt, you know, like a family to investors coming in and plowing $50 million into the business and saying like, yeah, go hire C-level executives and, you know, a COO and a CFO and rent a huge fulfillment center and, you know, invest your money, hire 100 people in a year. It just really changes things because you have a business that's profitable and growing. Any growth is like, wow, this is beyond my wildest dreams. And then, you know, these guys come in and they're like, your company's worth $1 billion. We want you to be the next Dropbox or whatever they thought was possible, Zappos or something, Amazon. And it's just retail, that's not very possible. If you've already bootstrapped a business that's pretty large, you know, investors can come in and they can, you know, they can help. They can help guide you to eventually build the business or IPO or sell your company. But you're going to, you have to want to do that. And the day-to-day of that kind of work is really different. Also, you become an employee of your company. You have equity in your company, but you have a salary. And I know that, you know, with the business that I'm building now with Business Class, I own 100% of it. If it does well, like, that's my paycheck. When you have investors, you don't just take distributions. You don't just, you know, you can have a salary. It's not going to be huge. It's just very different. You're building something called enterprise value, which is instead of course, you want to build revenue for the business, but there are companies that have absolutely zero revenue that have quote unquote enterprise value, which is the value of the company itself. And so when you have venture capitalists, investors behind you, they're looking at, okay, this thing is worth X money. And revenue is important. Profitability kind of goes out the door. And the focus isn't on, it's just so different. And I think you're really smart in not taking venture capital. I think it can be very sexy. You know, if you have a sizable business, you can take money off the table and they'll hand you $5 million or $10 million or whatever it is. Sometimes if like your business is already a decent size, 8, 10 million, whatever, 15 million. But it feels kind of short-sighted because you're signing up for something long-term that maybe isn't worth that, as crazy as that is to say. And if you, you know, like you have, keep building your business and owning it, you know, eventually you can collect that $1 million or $5 million or whatever it is and have fun and keep your team small and not have to go through all the mechanics of the ways that unlike sustainable growth that is demanded of you by investors.
I think that's a really great explanation, and that's where all of our hearts lie right now within the brand anytime this conversation comes up. And correct me if I'm wrong, but due to different circumstances, have you fully gotten to like exit a company and sell, invest yet, or did you get so close with Nasty Gal and then things didn't work out that way?
I mean, I guess when investors came in 2012, I owned 100% of the company. And then after they put $50 million in, I still owned 80% of it. I sold part of it. So some of that money went into my bank account. Most of it went into the company. And that was pretty game changing for me. They didn't acquire the business. They took a minority investment, but that was still a big game changer. And that's kind of what I was just talking about. And what was I saying?
Yeah, I love that. I'm usually the person saying that because I'm in my third trimester. So it's always like, does my brain even work anymore?
Oh my God.
I guess the general question there is, you know, and it's something I sort of always kick around, and I certainly kick around with the team. How do you know when it is time to start considering an exit plan, even more magically without VC capital?
Well, there's an urban clothing retailer that, when I owned 80% of the business, offered over $400 million for Nasty Gal. My investor said to ask for more, and the whole thing just kind of fell apart. And that would have been insane. I don't know what my life would look like right now, and I'm happy with my life. That was an opportunity that was really missed. I think, you know, they wanted us to continue to grow, and they wanted us to be like a $1 billion business before someone acquired us, or maybe we'd go public at some point. With my second business, Girl Boss, I did sell the company at the end of 2019 to someone who was actually an investor in the company and a friend of mine. And that felt really good. You know, we were on a high at the beginning of 2020. We were hiring. We had really, really big, you know, multi-million dollar deals on the table and a lot of momentum. And then COVID hit. And, you know, I was an employee of the business at that time, but we couldn't do events. We couldn't do retreats. We couldn't do our conference. And advertisers were like, oh, shit, like, we can't be advertising right now. Like, this whole thing just broke loose and people are dying. So I moved on at the middle of 2020. But it felt really good to sell the company. But I, you know, what I'm building now, I just don't want to do that. I feel like business class is my legacy and I want to keep it manageable. I don't want to sign up for too many things. If that means saying no to opportunities, awesome. But it's affording me a kind of lifestyle, you know, long term that would be different if I had investors or even probably if I sold this company as well.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just so, so good for people to hear. And I know probably many people listening might be at an early entrepreneurial stage, but kind of seeing a forecast, you know, with success and hearing the true pros and cons and the realness, you know, based on what your own personal happiness and goals are. And you said in a podcast, I think recently, an interview, that your core values now are freedom, flexibility, autonomy, and independence, which we have something very similar called the authentic code. How does that show up for you and help you navigate your yeses and nos to things? Because I think that's humongous. Like, you have to be so clear. I do it all the time. Like, amazing opportunities come by, a lot of money attached to it or whatever. And I'm like, no, it does not align. No way. And I know something even greater is going to come because of that. Tell me about your process.
I'm new at saying no to opportunity. It's not like people are necessarily throwing money at me to do things, you know, but it's very new that I'm not chasing everything. So if there are things that come around that are within kind of, you know, my interest, then I'll do it if it's a brand partnership or whatever. Everything that I do now, I want to be project focused. So we launch business class, enrollment opens for a couple weeks twice a year. Then I take students through it. They get access forever, but like, that is an 8-10 week period of my life where I'm really involved with it. And then I can kind of peace out for a little while. It's also a digital business, so I don't have to throw a conference. I'm really good behind a computer. It's how I built my first business. That's really important to me, is that I'm not kind of constantly feeding this beast that is a business. So if I write another book, that's a project. I'll do a podcast later this year, but it's going to be like a season. You know, I'd considered doing an ongoing podcast, for example. I did that for 5 years with Girl Boss Radio. And I was like, oh, I have such an audience with audio. I should totally take advantage of that. And then my boyfriend, my long-term partner, Galen, was like, hey, like, you set out this thesis basically of what it is that you did and didn't want to do. And while this is an opportunity for, you know, driving, you know, engagement and possibly revenue with the podcast, you don't want to be doing that every week. I've done it every week for 5 years. And eventually I kind of resented it because I was like, ugh, you know, I have to do this every week. I don't want to be subscribed to my own life. And that means saying no to opportunities. Like, yeah, I could have a huge podcast audience. Girl Boss Radio had 20 million downloads. But you know what? Like, I want to be able to go write a book in the summer and not like switch gears all the time, because I know what that's been like. And even if that means I have less people following me or less people aware of what it is that I'm doing, or I make less money or sell less courses as a result of it, it's worth it to me.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest, to begin. We have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money. But the real gem is the Pathway membership, because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else, such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the Pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily, in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones. You can use our special code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase or $20 off your first month of the Pathway. Again, that's all caps, EXPANDED, EXPANDED. Okay, now back to the episode. I know when we're first starting out businesses and stuff, there's so much hustle. I mean, I remember when I first started, it was like 14 to 16 hour days, you know, so you're not even thinking about this stuff. I do know since the very beginning, just because of the energetics of manifestation, no has always been the strongest, most powerful word for me, but it's always no in alignment with where I'm at and what I'm wanting. And so I love hearing that from you. You know, you've gone through so many different cycles. So it's amazing, amazing to hear that. And my other question would be, what constitutes that you've learned so far? Because obviously through both experience, as well as I think, you know, you research and read a lot. So I've seen in IG lives and stuff, a lot of business books and leadership books, when you really nail down the key qualities to good leadership, what does that come down to in your opinion?
That's a great question. That's something I learned the hard way, building, you know, a not so great culture, not knowing any better at Nasty Gal, and then, you know, reading the Glassdoor reviews and being like, oh shit, okay, how do I do this better next time? And when I founded Girl Boss, it was, you know, I really wanted to prove to myself that I wasn't just doomed to be a bad leader. I didn't know any better with Nasty Gal, even though it was my responsibility to know better. I was just, you know, I was in my early 20s, had no idea what I was doing. And so with Girl Boss, you know, I instituted kind of like ways of building empathy among the team from day one. So on Mondays, we had our Girl Boss moment. So we had a stand-up meeting every Monday morning for, it was like half an hour, and it was just like popcorn going around. Like, what was your most recent Girl Boss moment? And so that way, you know, the team cross-functionally, people who may not necessarily sit next to each other or be collaborating all the time are able to hear about what those people's lives are, what's really going on in their lives, and develop an understanding and see them as a human and not just, you know, some other person that's doing something different in the company. And we also did that with something called donut meetings, which is so weird, but there's a little app that you can install in Slack called Donut. And, you know, of course, like pre-COVID, we were mostly in the same place. We had a few people in New York and someone in Chicago. But Donut was this little app that each week would randomly put you in a little Slack chat with one other person on the team to say like, hey, it's time for your donut meeting. And that week, you like walked to coffee with them for 20 minutes and you did not talk about work. So you really kind of got to know people at random on a different level. Also, I mean, we had a lot of transparency. So you know, at the very end, COVID ate the business. We did layoffs. When that happened at Nasty Gal, people see it coming. They're like, okay, we're not hitting our numbers. You know, they feel it. People aren't stupid. And when people ask, like, are there going to be layoffs? You know, selfishly, of course, you don't want people to leave. So if they're going to be laid off, they'll just go look for other jobs or they'll quit. And it's like, oh my God, if there's an exodus, then it's even worse. We can't run the company. So selfishly, we're like, no. And then, of course, layoffs hit and people get really pissed. With Girl Boss at the very end, we told these guys, like, if we don't hit these numbers, this is what happens in a business. We can't afford to do XYZ, or like, we will have to spend less because we will have less. And that's all just like, they almost got an education in business and how to run a responsible business, even though, you know, they became the collateral and they were really grateful for that. So, you know, on the last day at Girl Boss, I had multiple employees emailing me, thanking me for their experience. And they had a heads up that they were going to be laid off and it wasn't shocking. And so it was a very kind of graceful dismount, and being transparent with people, you know, about the ups and downs of your business, I think is really important because you're treating them, you know, like adults and like owners in the business, which, you know, everybody wants to, they don't want to feel like they're a cog in the machine. They want to feel like they're a real player.
Yeah. And I totally think that's so, so important as well, especially with the directors at the company. We're always very transparent where we're at, when, and I love that. What other things have you learned that have been very successful with company culture? Because that's a big thing for me. That's always, I mean, I'm a very codependent boss. P.S. That's something I'm always trying to work on. And I see myself shoulder to shoulder with everybody. I don't see myself as, you know, like a hierarchy system. And so I'm always thinking of like trips we can take, or this year, you know, kind of taking 3 apps where it's like a housekeeper, a dog walker, or, you know, having somebody come over to massage whenever that's a possibility, and just kind of creating some culture because we are remote. We always have been. We were actually really prepared for this. But what about things like that? Like to really make it an environment that people really want to be a part of, even if it's not the huge tech company and the crazy salaries or whatever, but the overcompensation of a beautiful culture, a really tight family team.
Yeah, I mean, what that comes down to is acknowledgement. So what you're talking about is acknowledging people's hard work, that you see them, and you can do that in a meeting, in a touch base with them and tell them. But you can also do things, you know, my love language is like, one of them is like gifts. I give gifts to other people, even if their love language isn't gifts. And they're like, cool, thanks.
Same. My fiance is not. And he's always like, okay, thanks.
I know. He's like, thanks for this shirt. I don't care about shirts. And I'm like, I like you in this shirt. You're welcome. But I think it starts with acknowledging people for their work. Because you can always slap on, you know, benefits. We did that at Nasty Gal. And it was like, here's some snacks, right? But if people don't feel like they're acknowledged and seen and listened to, like no snack is going to solve that problem. You know, at Girl Boss, because we had a good culture, we worked in an office, but, and this was like radical at the time, but we worked from home on Fridays, like every Friday. And people loved that because they were trusted to, you know, it's not about how long your butt is in a seat. It's just like, get your work done. If you need to do other stuff, or you're going to go take a walk or run an errand, like that's totally fine. We're all adults as long as you get your work done. So, and it seems like you've built a great company, giving people that kind of trust and autonomy from the beginning. But ultimately, you know, people want to be acknowledged. People want some sort of flexibility. They want their personal lives to be acknowledged and be allowed to have those. And I mean, money is right. There's gifts, but people like want to make money. You know, in my business, I don't give performance bonuses. It's like, if you do a good job, you keep your job. If we make money, we can afford to give you a bonus. And I'll be generous with that. The thing that keeps us in business is revenue. And I can't give out bonuses for being awesome if we don't hit our numbers, right? You know, we shouldn't be, you know, investing money if we're not hitting our numbers. And, you know, with business class, we blew it out of the park and like, you know, everybody got bonused at the end of last year. But I do think if somebody doesn't get a bonus and you give them like a treat, you know, whether it's a bonus or, you know, at some point, just acknowledgement, you know, you can do that in conversation, but people love it when you do it financially. And that's how you retain people. People want to see it on all fronts.
I agree. And I totally understand that, having been in those positions. So I think that's really sound advice. And you mentioned at your setup meetings, people sharing girl boss moments that they've been experiencing. And Jessica on our team, one of her authentic codes is, what does she call it? She calls it like a boss babe, girl boss, I would imagine is very similar. What does that constitute for you, a girl boss?
Oh God, it's so funny. It's just like that word, it's like,
it's following you.
Yeah. Kind of haunts me. I mean, a girl boss is everything I described about a great entrepreneur. And whether you're doing that in your own business or in your life or in, you know, how you take care of yourself, you're proactive, right? You don't take no for an answer. And that works in other companies. If you're working for someone else, that's totally fine. You can be entrepreneurial. You can be an intrapreneur within other companies. So it's possible for anybody to be a quote unquote girl boss. But in terms of the girl boss identity, it's like I'll always be the girl boss, but I'm not building like a gendered business with Business Class. You know, it's mostly women who follow me. We had one dude, I think, one or two dudes take the course, but the word became, it became like unwieldy, like bootleg, you know, 20 million hashtags of girl boss on Instagram and bootleg merchandise on Etsy and pillows with the word girl boss and like the ugliest cursive on Etsy. And like, you know, it just became this whole like part of the zeitgeist, you know, prior to the women's movement. I'm not responsible for any of the women's movement, but it was unique in its time. There's nothing like it in the business book section. And I think it really hit a nerve. And then people called it a movement. And it's just like, I didn't have any control over that or the way people use the word. And it became, you know, and I'm like a white woman in business, became kind of this word that people threw around, you know, that became synonymous with white founders or something. I don't know. I think there's been some criticism of it. And like, I'm not a girl. I'm a woman. I'm not a girl boss. I'm just a boss. And it's like, no, it's like kind of a way of being. It's not descriptive. Like, don't take it so literally. So it was so noisy and so successful, which is awesome. That of course, you know, there will be some people who like pick at it, but I still get tons of people DMing me and people, you know, there are girl bosses. And then the word girl boss did spawn like boss, whatever. There's like every permutation of woman and boss out there now, which is like great, but I'm not building girl boss anymore. And I'm not really putting it out there with everything that I do.
And you would say the energetics of basically this feeling, this way of living really comes down to being in your worth, in your power, I would imagine, having vision, being proactive, like you said, having autonomy. That's sort of what I would associate with any type of empowerment, essentially.
I also think a certain amount of which is like, depending on where you come from and who you are, it's probably not as hard for a white woman to feel entitled as it is for a woman of color. But for everybody listening to this, the word entitled is usually seen as a bad thing. But there's a certain amount of entitlement you have to believe that you're not owed, but that you have to walk into what it is that you deserve.
Yeah, the energetic, I call that, I totally agree with you, 100% is deservingness, like knowing your deservingness. No matter what walk of life you come from.
Yeah, and that's not an egotistical thing. It's about confidence and kind of visualizing yourself, kind of like throwing out the fishing line to catch what your future can bring to you.
This question, though you're not in the space anymore at this moment, you know, you're interested in something very different, I think, but I'm curious about it because I actually like have no desire for it in any capacity. But going from private to public, pros and cons, what do you think about that?
Oh, I mean, I've never IPO'd. I personally would never want to be the CEO of a public company. You're at the whim of not just your customers, but also the market and your investors, and you have no control over who those investors are. it just seems like you're kind of, you have many masters, and I want as few masters as possible. And I really want my master to be my community, because that's who I'm really building this for. So, I mean, and the exposure you have and public meetings, it's just expectations, and you're living and dying by your quarterly results. And that just sounds like a complete nightmare.
Same. I'm right there with you. Zero interest in it. And the whole like aspects of boards and things like that, all of that is very stressful seeming to me. So I think we're directly on the same page. Okay, cool. Well, let's get a little bit more into the course a little bit. I know that you gave an overview of it, but it sounds like it's for every phase of an entrepreneur, from like the person who has a concept right now, a seed idea, to somebody who's already sort of building a business. Am I right about that?
It is. Yeah. You have to have an idea of what you want to do. We can help you clarify that, but it's not for someone who's asking, should I start a business? It's for someone who's ready to start a business and has an idea, just wants to clarify. That's what we do in the first week. But then we really take you through actually planning it and building it and clarifying it through the work.
And I'm trying to think back when I would work with people, you know, like their biggest blocks. I would see it obviously through the lens of manifestation, but a really big one, even on my speaking tour last year, or I'm sorry, 2019 into last year, it would always be like, why isn't my following growing? Or, you know, I don't have as many clients as I want, you know, depending on whatever they were in. My big thing was like, well, where are you hiding still? Where don't you want to be seen? What do you see being some of the biggest blocks that people go through when they're not progressing or they're not finding the success they want?
Yeah, I think people are really scared just to start. You know, they have all the tools they need. You know, they're looking at other people who are doing it successfully. They think that those people have some magic wand or secret that they don't have. And at the end of the day, the people who are doing what you want to be doing, the only difference is that they just started doing it and then they got better at it. And maybe it sucked in the beginning, but no one's going to pay attention to what your first podcast sounded like. So I think we think that other people are watching and criticizing us much more than we are. And it's really just about starting. And I talk in business class about an MVP, which is, you know, I didn't invent this, but a minimum viable product, which is just like, get something out there. I think people are very precious about having their idea fully baked before they bring it to the world. And it's totally okay to just test the waters, see if anybody cares about what you're doing, listen, interview potential customers, see if they like, what would they like to be different? What's not landing for them? And then iterate, because you could go spend a bunch of money in 6 months or a year, or tons of time building something that you think is the right thing, but it may not be a thing. And then you've lost a lot of time. So I would say just getting unstuck is the main thing, and having the confidence that it's okay to start somewhere and that from there you learn.
And for the people who, because I see this a lot, where they're not progressing, you know, say that they like feel like they really have their concept down, they are really putting themselves out there, but it's still just not materializing. What do you guys say about that in the course? Pivot?
Yeah, pivot, you know, and sometimes those pivots are small. I think I posted something on Instagram a while back that said like a pivot isn't necessarily a 180 or 360. Like sometimes it can be 10%. Like you can tweak something small and the whole world changes. You don't have to necessarily reinvent what you're doing to pivot. So I think, you know, if you're listening, if you are iterating, you know, if you are hearing from people that they care about what you're doing, then you have something and you just keep listening, you keep tweaking, and that can take a really long time before you get traction. I mean, if you're absolutely at zero for a long time, you know, maybe it is time to move on. Maybe what you're doing is more of a hobby than a business.
One thing that we tell our people, you know, when they're manifesting either an entrepreneurial catapult or they just really dislike the job they're in, and so they're trying to pivot into a space that brings them more joy, we have this concept that's called the bridge job. You know, and it's the place you go where maybe you're not fully expanded yet to manifest that catapult entrepreneurially that you want that will sustain your lifestyle, or maybe you don't have the skill set yet to like really get the job you want as a creative director at whatever, whatever. And so this bridge job we talk about, you know, it's a place where you are learning the skills you need to move into whatever it is you want to do. What are your thoughts about how do you know when it's actually better? And again, I know you and I were never really employees for that long, but how do you know the difference of like, I actually have it really good where I'm at. I'm getting a full course in business school. I'm getting to flex everything that lights me up in this and learn and make my mistakes. And then I can go on and do this myself or pivot somewhere else or whatever.
Totally. I think a lot of people think that to start a business, they have to like quit their full-time job and just go for it. And it's like, no, if you have security, you know, you need to understand that, you know, if you ever do pivot to building your business full-time, you're going to be working long hours. So to try it out, try it on for size, you know, test the waters, build something while you also have stability, expect to work longer days. You know, you can set aside like hours of your day after you finish your, you know, whether it's a day job or something more consistent to start building your business. It still means that you're an entrepreneur, and it can be very dangerous to just quit your job. And bridge jobs could also mean building expertise in whatever specialty that it is that you want to move into. And I think it's amazing to get the chops to do something like that on someone else's dime. And I find a lot of people doing that with me because I throw people into my business. They're incredibly entrepreneurial. I give them a lot of room to run. And then they're like, oh, I could go do this for myself. And that's great. But I think, you know, and that's something I wish I had was like, at the very least, you know, my bridge job would have been not some like retail job or working in the lobby, but even something where I was exposed to leadership. You know, maybe I wouldn't have learned retail in a bridge job between my crappy jobs and Nasty Gal, but I at least would have been exposed to what like good management looks like and been mentored by someone, right? So that when I went and became that person, I had some idea of what that even looked like. So bridge jobs can be to like develop different types of expertise, I think, either whether it's in the domain that you want to build your business in, or just getting exposed to the way successful businesses operate. I think that can be really, really powerful.
Something that I think would be fun to touch on a little bit that I bet is pretty laced inside of business class is pulling back the curtain. Because I think a lot of people don't know the mechanics that go into having a company and then building it into being a successful revenue generating company. But analytics, like what that means, cutting the fat in a company. I mean, we just released our first product, you know, in collaboration, and it took us years to say yes to one that was perfect. And we sold out in our first weekend. You know, it's like the logistics behind the scenes that you can kind of give us an overview on that they will see inside of the course would be really helpful for people.
Yeah. The curtains pulled wide open in business class. And I'm really honest about, you know, this isn't like rah, rah, here's like a general overview of how to build your business. This is like really getting into the weeds and saying like, hey guys, it's hard. It's hard for everybody. It doesn't matter how much experience you have, you know, the day-to-day of a business you're jumping from, and I know you've done this, like you're jumping from talking to customers to talking to partners to managing employees to putting out fires. There's always going to be fires, right? You have to be like a firefighter to run a business. And you're talking about like branding and copywriting and marketing and social media and yeah, measurement. You know, you mentioned analytics, and there's no healthy business that doesn't know what success looks like. And that's really important to establish up front. Okay, do I want to make this much revenue? And then how much profit, like how much money do I need to actually live on? Okay. How big does my business need to be to support that? But really, like how much can I take home after all my costs? So if you have a business that requires 10 people to do a job that may not be bringing in a ton of revenue for, well, maybe you're not really going to take much home at the end of the day. Some people are fine with that. I run inefficient businesses because there was, you know, millions of dollars in the bank from venture capital. But now with business class, it's really important to me that we're investing, you know, not having like shiny object syndrome. So for us, you know, I have three employees and, you know, as long as I can keep it that way, I'd like to. And we're all athletes and Swiss Army knives and doing a variety of things. And that's what it's like at the size business that we are. Even if I have a lot of experience, it's just like, it doesn't feel very corporate. And, you know, I'm not precious about, you know, wow, I want the pixel. I used to be like, wow, we'll just, you know, we built a social network at Girl Boss. And there's platforms out there, you know, you use Mighty Networks. There's platforms out there that are much better than the thing that it took us a year to build and cost us a ton of money to build. But I was so precious about the branding and like the where every like button was. And I thought, I mean, that's not the differentiator. So I really, really evangelize using just existing software now and not trying to build almost anything from scratch if you can.
Yeah. I mean, this is always our internal thing if for exactly what you're talking about, whereas everybody else on the team is much more logical than I am. And they're like, oh, it's a full-time dev team. Every time, you know, if it's an app, every time there's an upgrade, we could eventually have to pay to reduce, you know, it's like, I think that's a really important thing for people to know. Those resources are so lucky that they already exist, these platforms.
Totally.
Okay. So last but not least, moving into personal, because I think we did such a great coverage. But how are you doing personally? What's like, what's going on in your life? What are you up to now that you do have all this freedom? You have scheduled out, which is so brilliant, where you're not subscribed to your business all the time. You have this space to have emotional well-being, have a healthy relationship, act on something like Kauai. Tell us a little bit about that to get us expanded in manifestation.
You know, I've really changed my, you know, my schedule around, which I think we all have. During this time, it's nice to be home at 4:30 when the sun's setting and I can just walk my dog. And I may get back online after that and do some work. But at that time every day, I go in the Hollywood Hills where I live. It's beautiful. And just walk during the sunset and everything's pink, you know, and there's just the hillsides are pink and it's just, it's beautiful. You can see all the way to the ocean from here. So there are some rituals that I've kind of instituted that I certainly wasn't able to before. You know, I'd like to say that I have like this incredible morning routine. You know, I've done a lot more meditation. I've done a lot more journaling, done a lot more reading. I got a Kindle. It's great because there's no distractions on it. Last night, you know, I exercised at home. I have a little infrared sauna bed kind of thing and used that. And, you know, then I watched The Bachelor. So it's really like a mix of high-low of like how I spend my time. And I love playing with my dogs and collaborating with my partner on creative stuff for business class. We're about to go into shooting ads and, you know, welcome video. We're going to launch business class again in March. So we have a lot of work to do between now and then. And that's something that I get to collaborate on with him, which is super fun. Personally, I'm great. I feel more freedom than I ever have. And it took me a long time. I feel like I earned it. You know, a lot of people want to start out and have this work-life balance, which is awesome if you can figure that out. I didn't. And so I'm very, 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 very grateful for that now.
And I think you posted, it might have even been yesterday, but it was really great. You were kind of doing a morning routine and then you were like, and to wash it down with Prozac and a mood stabilizer on the side, which I think is so important to be transparent if you know, wherever somebody's at, but just like to really inspire people, you know, that like being yourself, being authentic, it's okay everywhere you're at. Tell us about what routines have really gotten you to this place. I mean, I know you just touched on a few, but what keep you emotionally well, mentally well?
You know, some downtime, I think connecting with my family, even if it's over Zoom, just taking a little bit more leisure time, like that part of my day. I was in this Clubhouse room yesterday, that new app, and it was a room called the Habits of Highly Productive People. And it was just like, they like put me on the stage and there's like 100 people on it. And everybody was going around and they were like, I drink this like fizzy thing and I take an ice bath and then I like meditate in the shower you know, I journal and I read and I meditate. And it's just like, oh my God, I'm so not that person. So sorry to be uninspiring here, but like this morning I woke up and like I rolled out of bed and was on a Zoom call and then another Zoom call and another Zoom call. And then here we are and I haven't eaten. Like I've been chugging coffee and yeah, I took my like meds. I did post about my morning routine on Instagram, which is like, I wake up, I drink coffee. I try to chug water, you know, but I don't always. I take my meds hopefully before I start feeling funky. You know, I've struggled with depression and anxiety my whole life. There are definitely other, you know, routes you can take to minimize those. I think I could do a lot better were I to institute a lot of the things that I think you teach. But I haven't, you know, I'm not like a well-rounded adult and nobody like instilled those things in me. So, you know, some mornings are more exemplary than others, but in terms of routine, like I am really lacking routine and I've relied on my business to provide a certain amount of routine for me in my calendar too. And so the most routine I have is with work, which I don't think is necessarily what I want.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also really cool the way you just put everything because it shows many people probably aspire to be where you are and to have accomplished what you've accomplished. And the fact that you are able to shine a different light on how you've done it than the 4-hour work week or the biohacking or the whatever. And I think what's cool there, even though, you know, you share that routine would probably be good for you or that you know, it's something you want to explore. I think it's really cool that you've gotten there being authentic and not feeling like you have to fit a certain mold or whatever.
And I beat myself up over it. I beat myself up over it all the time. And it may be the comparison thing. It may be, you know I need to start my day with more mindfulness. And it's something I feel guilty about all the time, especially watching all these people listening to this Clubhouse room or, you know, watching people post their morning routines and they're like, here's my checklist. Here's my mantra. I journaled 3 things I'm grateful for. It's just like, fuck, like, how long did it even take to make that matcha? Like, I can't even get it to like froth, you know?
I mean, what an exhale for so many people who feel that pressure. It's so big in our society.
I hope so.
Well, tell us how to engage in business class. It sounds like it's opening back up in March. Give us the whole rundown.
Yeah, I'm so excited. So this will be our second cohort of students that I'll run through business class. We have a wait list, or we're calling it flying standby right now. So everything is like airline themed. It's so fun. So you can fly standby now, and that's at takebusinessclass.com. And I'll share a lot more if you sign up for that, for those emails to let you know when it's coming and more about it. And I do that on my social as well. And it's just at Sophia Amoruso.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sophia, for all your time. It's been really cool connecting with you because it sounds like we have so much in common.
I know. I really enjoyed this.
Well, have a beautiful rest of your day.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you so much for tuning into the episode, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, we did. And in case you're not totally ready to join the pathway yet, I wanted to share a few of our free offerings that I'll often suggest to people as a little bit of a blueprint to get them started on their manifestation journey. The first place I like to direct people completely for free is The Motivation. You can see it linked below or on our homepage as our testimony library. And it's categorized by different subjects, whether you're calling in career, money, love, wellness, and much more. When you're reading about a member's experience of what they manifested, you're actually seeing to believe and showing your subconscious that that very thing is possible for you. The second place I like to direct people is to the free clarity exercise, which is also linked below. In it, you get to try our own unique hypnosis process, learn about the science, and some journaling prompts. And the best part about this, you'll get a tiny taste of what it's like to go into your hypnotic state, bring your subconscious forward, and create new neural pathways while receiving clarity. And the third thing, if you haven't listened to it on this podcast yet, please go back to the episode titled Manifestation 101, where you'll learn the basics of neural manifestation to truly understand this process. So go ahead and check out those free resources, the motivation, the free clarity exercise, and the episode Manifestation 101, all linked below. And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.